In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Wow, oh wow, oh wow. What a wild, exciting, exhilarating, controversial, heartbreaking night of high school football last night. We are here to talk about that and much, much more live here at First String Sports. I am your host, Paul Metters, and this is the Central Valley Sports Report. Thank you to First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue. They have been my day one sponsors from the beginning of the show over 3 years ago. Thanks to these guys, Letterman's Jacket Room. That's where I do my show. I love doing my show from here. Just looking at all the great jackets from Sanger and Liberty, Fresno Christian, who had a big win last night. Clovis North, how about them? Big win. We're going to be talking about their game against Clovis East. There's Redwood, Bullard, Woodlake. It's the place to be for all your Letterman's Jackets needs, First String Sports. And, yeah, like I mentioned in the opener, wild, exciting, controversial. Yes, we're going to be talking about some controversial stuff that went on last night. There are two major things that went on that altered games. Again, you guys know my personality if you've listened to me enough and read my tweets. I like to consider myself a positive guy, a guy that focuses on all the good stuff that happens up and down the central section. But yeah, I got to mention a couple things from last night. There's a big call in the Shafter football game against Chavez. I'm going to be getting into huge calls, something that I've never heard of before. I've never seen before. Called it, ended the game, and it's going to be talked about for a long, long time. There was a call in the Clovis East and Clovis North game that gave Clovis North a crucial first down. It was unsportsmanlike conduct on Clovis East, and some different footage have come out, so there might be a different angle, different take on that. But yeah, lots of emotions last night in the semifinals. Our D1 finals are set for next Friday. And if you are practicing during Thanksgiving week, that's one of the goals that you have at the beginning of the year. We want to be practicing during Thanksgiving week. And it is Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving next Thursday. We get the whole week off from school. It's the first time we've had that ever. We usually have Monday and Tuesday off, but we get the whole week off. So I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, Friday games are set. Semifinals were altogether pretty darn incredible last night. All right, so who are we talking to today about all these great events? Well, after the break, we're going to be talking with Kyle Biggs. How about them Central Grizzlies, the number 7 seed? Oh, throw those seeds out, right? It doesn't matter to those Grizzlies. Went down last week, beat the 2 seed Frontier, went down, beat the back-to-back defending D1 Central Section champs, the Liberty Patriots, on their home field. Defending state champs as well, kind of been Central's nemesis over the past few years, went ahead and defeated them 35-21. We'll be talking with Coach Biggs about that incredible game that they played last night. They're going to be advancing to play Clovis North, defeated Clovis East last night. Gabe and I are going to be breaking that game down at the end of hour number two. So we'll have to wait a while to hear some specifics about that game, but that was one of the... I hate using that word wild. I'm using that word a lot, that adjective a lot. But one more intriguing, almost come from behind win from Clovis East. They fell 34-28. The game was 34-7, entering the fourth quarter. And Clovis East had a chance to get the ball back with a chance to win the football game. But Clovis North, still undefeated on the season, advanced to play Central. We'll be talking about that game all week. Listen to the chatter. Listen to the predictions. But those two teams are going to be playing at Veterans Memorial Stadium on Friday. All right, so who else is coming on? Well, we got another incredible clutch moment from Kerman. Kerman just keeps doing it. Those Lions keep winning football games. Last week, they went on the road and won on the last second against Kennedy. Well, they did it again. They went down... Well, I guess to the side, I guess you should say. They went west to play Mission Prep, San Luis Obispo. They were the top seed in Division I. Lions won 20-14 in overtime. I'm going to be talking with Coach Damon Jenkins. I actually chatted with him while he was driving home. He's around Atascadero around 11:15. He's super stoked about this team. Just kept saying, we believe, we believe, we believe. And we're all believers now in the Lions. They are going to be taking on Mission Oak next week. And how about this? It's the first time that Kerman has been in a championship game in football in the history of the school, since 1920 when football began. First time Kerman in the championship game. Congratulations. We'll be talking with Coach Jenkins right before hour number two. At the top of hour number two, Jackson Moore from Barkboard. You hear him a lot on Tony D's show. He and Gabe Camarillo help run Barkboard. Do an incredible job with Fresno State. He was actually at the CBC game last night. Got to watch Bryson Donaldson, the running back committed to Fresno State. And another wacky game. CBC, the top seed, they held off barely to Larry Union, 43-42. Got a late touchdown, a two-point conversion to win that one. They were down at one point, 42-28, and somehow found a way to win. Well, we're going to find out directly from Mason Hughes himself, the coach at CBC. He's jumping on right after Jackson Moore. And then after that, Gabe Camarillo. So as you can see, a absolutely loaded show today. It's going to move super, super quick. Can't wait to get all this information out to you guys from all the great football games from last night. I want to mention, too, Buchanan Boys Water Polo. They are playing in the state championship today. They won their section championship. They're playing in their state championship. I believe that game is at 2 o'clock today, maybe in the rain. Actually, it's up north, so who knows if it's raining up there. But speaking of rain, Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating weather report. Right now it's 66 degrees, high of 67, so this is about as hot as it's going to get. Right now it's raining. Well, there's a 30% chance of rain next hour. At kickoff for Fresno State tonight, another 30% chance. So, hey, 3 out of 10 chance that there's going to be some rain tonight. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the show. A little bit more about Clovis North and Clovis East. Jackson Sinfell started off the game with two long touchdowns in the first quarter. Ended up being a 28-0 lead. Ended up being 34-7 heading into the fourth quarter. And Clovis East made a monumental comeback in that one. Couple touchdowns. Ty Miller threw a touchdown. Got an onside kick. Threw another touchdown. Harold Duvall. All of a sudden, guys, it's 34-28. Right? Clovis North, all they need is a couple first downs to win the game. They took a timeout with 2:20 left. It was 3rd and 5. They ran a bubble screen, blown up by Clovis East. Those guys played lights-out defense in that fourth quarter. They're flying over the field defensively especially. And about 10 seconds after the play was done, you see that ugly yellow flag, unsportsmanlike conduct on Clovis East. Automatic first down. Basically ran out the clock. They were forced to punt with 18 seconds left, but Clovis East had too many men on the field. Another automatic first down. Game over. Game over. So what went on? Well, at first we thought, well, excessive celebration. That's why they called it. Well, it's a high-level football game. They're pretty excited, right? Kids are going to jump up and down. You can't throw a flag on excessive celebration. But then we heard, well, maybe there is some choice language that was thrown around. That could be the only thing understandable in that situation. Well, if that's true, that's, I don't know, to affect a game like that for some bad language. Maybe they were warned beforehand. Maybe not. A lot of chirping in games like that, I'm sure. So later, we'll talk to Gabe about this. He found a video showing a Clovis North player with a slight headbutt of a Clovis East player. And what always happens, guys, you see it everywhere. You see it in pro football, college football, the second guy gets caught, and he did. And so the flag was thrown. I don't know what was said exactly. There was no physical contact after that. Cost Clovis East, cost them a chance to try to win the game. So tough to see. On one hand, again, we don't know exactly what went on, but yeah, I know the coaching staff at Clovis East was pretty frustrated with that play. You could see them on the sidelines in disappointment. You know, as a fan, of course I'm a fan of high school football. We'd like to see the kids play the game out and see if Clovis East could come back with a monumental victory. But nope. wasn't to be. Clovis North comes out with a victory. All right, Central Valley Christian, again, we mentioned that 43-42 win over Tulare Union. Who are they going to play? Well, they're going to play the defending champ, setting up a rematch from last year. Lemoore defeated Centennial. They had to come back in that one, 20-14. Centennial went 14-12. Lemoore got a touchdown, two-point conversion for that win. In D3, we mentioned Kerman beating Mission Prep 20-14. They'll be playing Mission Oak, who defeated Washington Union. Good run through the playoffs for the Panthers, 39-25. In D4, Dos Palos defeats Exeter to go to the title game, 28-21. And then Torres against Shafter. Torres comes back with a two-point conversion, so to speak, to win the game on the last play of the game, 43-42. Okay. I'll set this up. I only got a few minutes before we got to hit the break. But this is one of the big talks last night on social media, on some Twitter spaces. Everyone's talking about this. I'm sure if you're a coach in the Central Valley, you heard about this. Okay, so Torres is lined up to kick a tying extra point after scoring a touchdown in overtime. Tying extra point. What happened is it was a high snap, and the snapper on those situations is tough. It's a high snap. You can't handle it. What do? Well, try to get the ball, run around a little bit, and get rid of it. Hope for a miracle. Well, they did. Toss the ball right over the middle, I believe number three. And he caught it and celebrated. Game over, right? How about this? The guy he threw it to was the center, the long snapper, the hiker. He's ineligible. He can't catch the ball. He's not lined up in the right spot. The referees blew it. They missed it. Shafter is going nuts. Torres is celebrating, right? And why shouldn't they? They think they won the game. They did win the game. The game is over. It's 43-42. Shafter was upset. They try to talk to the referees. The referees are basically running off the field. The referees, according to some sources, admit to making a mistake. Admit to blowing it. Why do they not get together and talk about it and have the cojones to make the right call? They didn't. So there might be a protest. It might go to CIF, but, hey, I think the game is over. I mean, what's CIF going to do, right? It was a call that's on the field. They left the field. It's done. It's over with. It's over with. So Heartbreak City, that's the heartbreak of sports. Shafter falls. They were undefeated. They were in the number one seed, defending champs. So we're gonna see how this develops in the next week. Division 5, Bishop defeats Morro Bay. Wasco defeats Liberty Madera, 13-7. Sorry, Bishop, Morro Bay is 28-6. Sorry, 28-26. And D6, Mendota defeated Fowler. Lots of points, 100 points in that one, 56-44. Strathmore, 28. Arvin, 21. So how about this? Mendota's going to be playing Strathmore. Bishop's going to be playing Wasco. All right, we're going to hear directly from some of these coaches. Oh, man, can't wait to talk to these guys and see how they won their football games. Next, Kyle Biggs from Central on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to the San Francisco Giants on locally owned 1430 ESPN.
Hi, my name is Smack, Business Development Manager, and to me, my FFB is Financially Fit Bank. So there's a lot going on in the finance industry right now. We've seen a lot of bank closures, a lot of uncertainty with customers about what's going to happen with their banking. That's why we want people to know that FFB is a financially fit bank. There's no need to worry. We do things differently. FFB keeps growing. Not only are we continuing to diversify our customer base, but we also experienced record profitability in 2022. If you want a healthy, thriving bank that you can trust with your business finances, then FFB is the bank for you.
Welcome back to Centralized Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metter. And I need about 5 hours for today's show, given the rundown of those games and some of my thoughts. And, yeah, I got a lot more thoughts about what went on last night. Again, high school football, man, get a little bit of everything. Thrill of victory, agony of defeat, a little controversy here and there. Huh? It's what makes sports so fascinating. We got Kyle Biggs on the line right now. Central with a great game plan, great execution last night, went down to Bakersfield. Defeated the two-time Central Section defending champs 35-21. They're going to be playing Clovis North at Veterans Memorial Stadium next week for another chance at a D1 Central Section title. Congrats, Coach Biggs. First of all, I want you to describe your practices leading up to this week and what did you and your staff game plan against Liberty?
Where we knew our game plan was going to be, defensively we had to play tough. We had to stop the run, get them to throw the ball, take away their shots. They like to take a lot of shots offensively. So we were trying to make them have to drive the field and not make the big play. And, you know, of course, on the first play of the game, we gave up a big play for a touchdown. But after that, the kids settled in and battled back and did a great job. Offensively, it was just about finding our keys, making our reads, getting guys in the right spot, getting the guys in space, and let them make plays.
Yeah, you mentioned that first touchdown for Liberty. So that was on the first play from scrimmage?
No, they got a three and out. We didn't get an inch on offense on our first three plays. And then they get the ball and score a touchdown on that first play. So not a great start.
But then you guys responded with three straight touchdowns to take a 21-7 halftime lead. What was working in that first half so well for you guys?
We were able to run the ball. David Bell runs extremely hard, did a great job of getting in between the tackles and finding some running lanes. The offensive line did a good job of staying on their blocks and moving people. And David did a real good job of getting us in and out of the right plays and making the right reads and making the good decisions on where to go with the football. And we were just able to kind of not too many big plays. Braylon had a big play at the end of the first half, but I mean, I think our biggest play up until Braylon's 46-yarder was like a 19-yard completion. So we were just doing a good job of taking what the defense was giving us and moving down the field and finishing drives.
Were you able to hold them in that first half, especially for, you know, after that first touchdown by them? Were just kind of hold them to 7-8 yards sometimes on their passing plays, or you know, take away the big play?
Yeah, you know, they didn't really throw. They don't really throw short unless they have to, and we knew that. They did a great job in the second half of coming out and throwing the hitches and going to their quick game, and they were able to move down the field on us a lot easier in the second half than they did in the first half. So again, it's a chess match. You know, where they make adjustments, we got to adjust to their adjustments, and you know, guys got to make plays, and we did a good job against their big, tall 6'4" receiver with our little corner. Jamari battled and they threw, I think, two or three fades on him, and he didn't give up anything on him. So he did a great job competing.
Talking with head coach Kyle Biggs of Central High. Did you have a fiery halftime speech, or was it like, hey, guys, we got him where we want him? Or what was your halftime speech like?
It's 24 more minutes, man. Got to keep believing. And then we got 24 minutes to finish the job. And that's all our mindset was to go in there believing we could win the football game. And once we got to halftime, I think the kids started to really believe they could do this. And, you know, in the second half, they got a touchdown. They got a field goal and a touchdown to start the half. So just like that, it was 18-21. And, you know, we went on a nice, slow, methodical drive, just taking what the defense was giving us and marched down the field. And we're able to extend our lead to 28-18, which I think was huge for our mindset.
And then it was 28-21 after a field goal, but with 7:06 left, there it is. Marquez de Braylon Hall, your dudes again, and gave you that 35-21 lead, ultimately held up. When you guys scored that touchdown, it was like, man, guys, I think we got this one. How big of a play was that touchdown to give you that 14-point lead?
First, I was super, super stoked for E.J. Morgan. He's a little sophomore wide receiver. He's really been stepping up these last few games this year, but he had a tremendous block to set Braylon up for that touchdown. And, I mean, he did a phenomenal – he took out two guys with his block and set it up beautifully for Braylon. And just seeing that unselfishness and him knowing exactly what his job is on that play and for him to execute it was just – I was mostly excited about that little thing more than the touchdown, really, because that's when you know the kids are buying in. That's when you know they're doing the right thing because they all want the same common goal is to win. So when it was EJ making the block, I knew we had a really good chance to close that game out. And then Braylon just finished it off with a touchdown.
And so you said little guy. So how big is he, and how much of his body did he spring forward for that block?
Well, it was just they had their safety. He was running full speed at him coming downhill, and he shoved the corner out of the way. They got him out of position, and then he picked off the safety, and you know, EJ probably weighs, you know, 160, 165 pounds, and you've got a guy weighing 180 coming at him full speed, and he stood there and did a great job and had a tremendous block. If he doesn't make that play, we don't score that touchdown. Who knows how the game finishes?
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there another play that you can point to, Coach, during the game that maybe was an unsung play? Maybe somebody made a tackle in space, or was a play that you guys were working on to defend throughout the week? They're like, man, the guys really bought in and executed. Was there a little play like that that might have been a key to the game?
You know, I think defensively, just the way they performed, man, those kids played their hearts out. They did everything we asked them to do. They got after the quarterback. There was a play in the fourth quarter. They ran a draw, and Smallwood was right there to stuff it for a 2 or 3 yard gain, where if he misses that tackle, it's a 7, 8, 9 yard gain. Now they got the first down on the next play, but then after that, it was a turnover on downs for them. So it was a crucial stop, because who knows if he pops a big run right there, how that drive ends up being. That was when the score was 35-21 at that point, and there was still 6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, those little plays certainly matter. And when you see guys step up and make big tackles like that, it certainly fires up your defense. But your defense has stepped up a lot, especially late in games this year. You held Liberty's quarterback, Cole O'Brien, who's a threat to pass, obviously, and a threat to run, to 11 of 28 from the field for 146 yards. And that lone TD, I believe that was his own touchdown throw, was in that first quarter. And then you held their running back, Duluth, to 82 yards on 20 carries. That dude's been a load all season. Do you think the defense as a whole, Coach Biggs, just took this game personally? Like, all right, offense is doing their job. Now it's time to do our job. They have a little play with the chip on their shoulder?
You know, they're playing a little more with a little more focus, I would say. At the end of the year, we kind of – we were just out there trying to play fast and fly around, and we didn't necessarily do our jobs or do what we were supposed to be doing. It was kind of like see ball, get ball. And now we're doing our jobs, and it shows. We're gap sound. Kids are playing hard. They're flying around. They're making plays, but they're doing it. They're doing the little things right, and we didn't necessarily do that at the beginning of the year. And I think that's been the major difference in as a team and how we've been playing lately.
And Coach Biggs, I've watched your teams play for, you know, the last 7 or 8, 9 years, and you've had some very talented teams that won state championships and teams that have won central section championships, obviously. But this team just seems different. A lot of question marks going into here. Let's be honest about that. And you made a quarterback change. And, you know, what just makes this team tick? What's the difference? How far has this team come and impressed you?
A long way, man, because we've had a lot of talks from last season, last off season in January, leading all the way up to the spring, to the summer. Even last time we played Liberty, I told the kids, like, we got to look in the mirror, and it's a gut check time. You know, we got to figure out who we are and who we want to be and how are we going to get there, because we can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. And the kids, since that point, have really – kind of changed their mindset and started to do little things right. They're working a little harder, working a little smarter. We're not just expecting to show up on Friday nights and win. We're putting in the work Monday through Thursday to have a right to win on Friday nights. And that's what it comes down to. And I'm proud of these kids for buying in and really just working their tails off and giving themselves an opportunity to play for a Valley Championship. They were excited last night, but I told them that, you know, job's not done, guys. There's nothing to be excited about. Been here before. Like, we don't celebrate semifinal victories. Like, we got a job to do. Let's get on the bus. Let's go home and let's get to work.
And again, you took a drive down 99 and came back with a victory. That must feel really, really good. What was your prevailing thoughts while you were driving? Were you driving home or were you on the bus? You take your own vehicle?
My wife got a flat tire on the way there, and she wanted me to come home with her and the kids. So I was with her on the way home, it's a relief, but at the same time, it's all right, like it's on to the next thing. So it's figuring out how to get close north. Like that was the goal as soon as the game was over. It's like, okay, let's go to the next one.
I'm going to get to Clovis North definitely in a second here. But, yeah, you've coached some pretty darn good receivers. And you know, Xavier Worthy and Jeremiah Hunter. But Breland Hall, that guy just comes up with clutch plays. He's a dude. He's been on my show. He's kind of like the all-American kid. He's good-looking. He's well-spoken. He's very, very popular. I see him after games taking pictures with a bunch of people. I mean, he's just a great kid. What do you have, 11 catches for like 192 or something crazy like that, and then a couple touchdowns. But in what ways is that guy different?
You know, he's just a blue-collar kid, man. He works hard, and he does little things right. You know, he's not going to blow by someone like Xavier Worthy is, but he's a technician out there. He knows how to get open. He's got his IQ for the game is one of the best we've ever had for a receiver, knowing when to get open, knowing how to get open, knowing where to get open, just little nuances and, you know, how to position his body when the ball's coming to him. He did it last night. He had two guys closing in on him, and he just kind of got a little sideways right before the ball got there and slipped right between both of them and made a big play and let us – we scored two plays later after that. So it's really his savvy. He's just a savvy – he's a football player, man. That's what I tell these recruiters when they come through. Like, you know, he's a football player. Like, this is a guy you want on your team. This is a guy who's going to help your team win. This is a guy who's going to get open when you need someone to get open. This guy is the guy who's going to do the little things right to help your team be successful. That's the best way I can describe Braylon. He's just an old school throwback football player, man. He's got great IQ. He does the dirty work, and he's competitive and he competes.
And so let's talk about Clovis North. You know, it was the game that we broadcasted last night. We know their pedigree, undefeated, ranked in the top 10 in the state, tough to stop. They beat you guys 27-20 earlier in the season. Obviously, that was, you know, a while ago. But what do you guys have to do better this time to knock them off?
You know, I think their tempo kind of, you know, that first half, they kind of punched us in the mouth, and we didn't know how to respond. We did a great job in the second half. We just got to avoid that being on our heels in the first half. So, you know, already playing them, we have an idea what to expect. And, you know, we have a better understanding of what to expect and how it's going to happen. So, I think that benefits us a little bit. We know they're going to do some things different. They're going to change some things up. You know, they're a great staff over there, great players. They're going to figure some things out and do some things to try to throw us off our game. And we just got to be able to adjust and prepare and you know, make adjustments on the run and figure it out.
Talking to Coach Kyle Bigg of Central, they're going to be facing Clovis North for the D1 Central Section title next Friday, the day after Thanksgiving at Veterans Memorial 7, at 7 o'clock, Veterans Memorial Stadium, I should say. You know, Coach, I want to ask you a little technical question about mindset and how to you know, game plan for a team like Clovis North. So again, watching their game, you know, run for every four rushes, they might throw the ball. You know, every once in a while they'll hurt you with a pass and that things will be opened up. But late in the game, it seems like for Clovis North, those things aren't really open. You know, in the rhythm of a game, you can surprise teams with one of those passes that they take to the house, and they're pretty good at it. But as a coach and with your coaching staff, you know, when it's crunch time, what's the best way to defend a team like Clovis North, let's say in the fourth quarter, where you know they're going to run the ball, most likely not going to throw it? What's the best way to defend a team like that?
I mean, you know, Clovis North, to their credit, they haven't had many drives where they have to close out a game. And, you know, they're really just running the ball to end the game because they're up three scores or two scores or whatever it may be. And, you know, so they're not at their peak of trying to deceive the defense with their play, because they very easily could call play action pass in that moment and probably throw a 60, 70-yard touchdown because everyone's committed to the run. They just don't have to because they're up by so many scores at that point already, if that makes sense. But, I mean, if the game's on the line, you got to stop the run. I mean, they're going to run the ball, so you got to stop it, and you got to teach your guys the keys to what to look for from the eligible receivers. So if they see it, that they're able to read it and react to it and still cover it so you don't give up an easy score.
Why do you think, Coach, it's difficult to beat a team twice in the same season. Again, you're playing Clovis North again. You know, we saw it last night. Obviously, North defeated East twice. But why can it be difficult for to beat a team twice in a season?
You know, they're high school kids. It's mental. Sometimes you go in thinking we beat them once already. Like, we'll beat them again. And, you know, we're the same team. They're the same team. Nothing's changed. And, you know, sometimes as a coach, you may go in a little, this worked last time, it's going to work again. You know, so that, I think it's all mental. I think that's more than anything physical. It's a mental mindset. And, you know, they beat Clovis West and Clovis East. So the two teams had to beat twice, they beat twice. So, you know, they've done what they're supposed to do. So it's going to be a dogfight. I know that.
So no, it is. And you know, Liberty wasn't able to beat you guys twice, and you guys made the great adjustments to win that game last night, 35-21. Okay, Coach, a little controversy. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if you want to talk about it necessarily, but Shafter, right? And, you know, it looked like the referee didn't know who was eligible on a play. Their center caught a botched snap going for an extra point, turned into a two-point, you know, quote-unquote, conversion and got the win. As a coach, you know, before the game, you have to talk to the referee and declare who your long snapper is, right? I want to make that clear. How does that work out with the referee before the game?
No. I mean, I've never had to tell them who my long snapper is.
Really? Okay.
The only questions they ever ask about special teams is your kicker right-footed or left-footed? So they know what side to stand on. You know, Joe Marquez is my guy, man. That's my boy up there at Matilda Torres. He's doing a great job, and I know he didn't want to win the game that way, and I know, he's got to be torn up and feel, you know, 1,000 different emotions, and, you know, he's not the referee in that situation. He didn't make the call. Obviously, he didn't draw it up that way to try to win that way. My heart goes to both teams, man. That's a terrible situation for both those teams to be in, and, you know, what has the CIF said anything or made a comment on how they're going to handle that?
No, I haven't heard anything at all. I'm going to try to make contact with the CIF office later today. Obviously, everything was late last night. New information came out about that play. But, yeah, I mean, an absolute tough way to lose a football game. You go all year, you're undefeated. Talking about Shafter, and it comes down to a play like that where, according to a source from Shafter, the referees literally admitted after the game that they blew the call. So to hear that is just an extra double gut, punch gut, you know, punch of their gut. So it's just, you're right. You said it right. It's just a difficult situation.
Yeah, and, you know, that's happened a few times in a few games with the referees, and it's all the point where, you know, just, we know you missed the call. We know it was messed up. Don't tell me. It's not going to make me feel better.
No, it's not. But this week is going to be a good week. You guys are playing in the title game on Friday. You're practicing during Thanksgiving week. That's what you want to do. All right, Coach Biggs, I got to ask you, what's your perfect Thanksgiving plate? What are you loading up on? You got all the options there on the table. What are you loading up? Your mashed potatoes, stuffing, turkey, gravy, everything, guy?
Oh, yeah, man. Not really. Some stuffing, but you got to depend on. I'm not a big celery vegetable guy, so I got to get the right scoop. But, yeah, I go with the Cajun turkey. This year we're going to get from my guy Eugene Mitchell. Great job. He set up a barbecue for one of our team meals, and it was phenomenal. I'm stoked.
You're breaking up a little bit, but are you the type of guy that mixes everything together? You don't mind when everything's mixed together?
Oh, yeah. You got to get it all together. You got to have a little flavor of everything in every bite.
All right. Dessert. What's your go-to for dessert? What do you have to have?
Oh, pumpkin pie. My birthday is usually around Thanksgiving, so sometimes my mom hooks it up with one of those Reese's pies. Oh, phenomenal. Phenomenal.
All right. Well, maybe you'll get that for your Thanksgiving/birthday this year, Reese's pie. But, hey, you're going to have that treat the day after you're playing for a Central Section title. Always great to talk to you, Kyle. Good luck, man. I'll be talking to you this week, and have a great weekend, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
You bet. All right. Coach Kyle Biggs, Likes a Reese's pie. Got to have it. Mixes everything together for his Thanksgiving meal. All right, good guy to talk to. Love to hear his perspective on things. We'll be talking with Kerman High coach Damon Jenkins. How about them Lions, right, playing in the Central Section Championship game in D3? Can't wait to hear what he says. Coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. You can catch me on the Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. Yep. Still refuse to call it X. No, I'm good. Everybody knows that it's Twitter. I'm not even used to that X signal in black and white. I want that little bird. Right? Bring back the bird, the blue bird. Come on, Elon. Let's go. I know you own like 72% of the world, but come on, bring back Twitter. All right. Okay. Just had a really good conversation with Coach Kyle Biggs. His Grizzlies are headed to the D1 section title against Clovis North. Damon Jenkins, how about them Lions? I've said that a lot on the show already. They defeated number one Mission Prep last night, 20-14 in OT, the game that we are keeping track of. It was 14-0. Kerman, then 14-14, and then pulled out that overtime win. They're going to be playing in their first football Central Section title game in school history. School started football in 1920, first time in history, coached by Damon Jenkins, doing a phenomenal job. So, Coach, I called you. I knew you were going to answer because you had that long drive home around 11:15. I said, you guys did it again. You said, Paul, we believe. We believe. How are the Lions doing this, Coach?
Yeah, and I mean, they just believe. When I took this job, like I said last week, I told them I think we're capable of winning a Valley Championship. And so, I think having the tough schedule we did at the beginning, and the kids starting to see that, like you said last night, we're kind of battle tested. Mm-hmm. So I point those things out to our kids. Like, we've played some good football teams throughout this season, and you guys are capable of winning. And so, our kids stepped up to the challenge last night.
Well, you said we believe, but was there a point in the season where maybe the kids at the beginning, you said, okay, guys, we can do it. We can go to the Valley Championship. But did they look at you funny? Like, at what point of the season then they really did think, yeah, Coach, we really believe? Is there a certain point?
Well, I think I think everybody looked at me crazy, because I've been preaching it since the offseason.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, like, I tell people, or I tell my kids, like, I literally watch them every single day. I've been with them every single day when we started in February. So I know what our kids are capable of. And, an old coaching saying is, a coach is supposed to take a player where he won't take himself. And so, and that's my job, and that's one thing that I've strived to do every single day. And that's what I've been preaching since February of last year, or this year, is Valley Championship. We can do it, we can do it, we can do it. And I think, honestly, I think the real turning point for us was, like I said, the Kingsburg game. I think once the kids did, played the way they played versus the Kingsburg team, I think that actually boosted their confidence 10 times more. And so after that game, we started, winning wins off, and they just kept going this whole entire time.
Well, that game was a 19-13 loss, and you guys have not lost since then. 6 straight wins. All right, let's talk about the game. So Mission Prep, not a lot is known about them here in the, Fresno, local greater Fresno community area. You guys went up 14-0 at halftime. What was working in that first half for you guys? How did you guys score your touchdowns?
I mean, our quarterback play was very good last night. I mean, Adam Delgado came up huge like he always does for us. Our defense came up with some big stops that was able to get our offense the ball back. So that's really what helped us last night. I think that was probably one of Adrian's best games last night. He was able to control the clock and make good decisions. And so we put the ball in Delgado's hands, and he made plays.
Defensively, were you guys just flying around the football? I mean, Mission Prep, they're not a real throwing team, are they? They're more of a ground team. But were you guys just flying around the field, making plays?
Yeah. Yeah, when I watched film this morning, we preached 11 halves to the ball, and that's pretty much what we were doing all night. And to your point, we thought that Michigan Prep was going to come out and run the ball a lot more, but they actually came out and passed a lot more last night, which we were a little bit surprised about. But our kids stepped up to the plate and played great defense, especially in OT. I mean, we got a quick three and out in OT and, you know, got our offense back the ball, and then that was all she wrote at that point. But, you know, our defense only really gave up 7 points last night other than the kickoff return that they got on us coming out of half. So our defense played very sound last night.
So after you guys got the three and out in overtime, were you like, oh, man, let's just be smart, maybe, get 10 to 15 yards, and if we have to settle for a field goal for the win, we can give it a shot that way? Or are you just super confident, hey, we know we can pound this thing in the end zone for the win?
Oh, no, we're going for the win. I have the utmost respect and the utmost trust for my OC, Anthony McCoy. For him, I let him do his thing. You know, I like to call him the Picasso, being the OC. I just give him a platform and he goes and does his thing. And so last night, only thing I did say was, hey, just make sure we run towards the middle in the event that we do have to kick a field goal. But other than that, I let him do his thing. I let him do his play calling, and he made the right decisions and the right call and put our quarterback in. And again, Adam Delgado in the right position to make that play.
And how far was the touchdown catch and throw? Was it like 10, 13 yards?
I believe so. We were in the red zone. I think we're probably on the 15, maybe. Yeah, between the 10 and the 15. It was a beautiful play by Adam. Adrian put it in on a spot where only he could get the ball. So it worked out perfectly for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk with Damon Jenkins of Kerman. They're playing in the Central Section title game next week against Mission Oak. All right, so last week you told me when you guys won the game against Kennedy, running down the field on the final play, you pulled some hammies. I know you were a stud at Fresno State and De La Salle, so you're an athletic dude. How'd you celebrate this time? Did you just take it easy, just celebrate jumping in the air? How'd you celebrate?
I did. I was like, I can't run this. But, you know, it was, again, one of those real moments. This time I didn't need to run down the field.
It was right there.
Yeah, exactly. It was right there. The kids ran down. They did all the celebrating for me. It was fun, though. It was fun not, you know, see everybody run out there. And I tell you, you guys took this. This is y'all turn this time. I'm going to play it safe.
And you mentioned your OC, Coach McCoy, man. That guy's got a lot of football experience, obviously. Just describe what he means to your program and how much you trust him, and to have a guy with that much football experience right by your side calling plays.
Well, I mean, he sleeps, eats, and breathes football. That's one thing about him. He's constantly looking for ways to evolved as a play caller. He's constantly watching film, whether it's of NFL, high school, college. He's constantly just studying. We're yin and yang. Like, he brings the energy to practice. That's what he does. He has that big personality, and I think he's learned that from playing under Pete Carroll. I mean, he mimics a lot of things Pete does when he comes out to the field, brings that energy and that excitement. And so to have him on my staff, it's been a blessing for me. For him and his ability to call the offense, and, you know, we feed off each other. We talk all the time. Like, if I got to play, or if I put up my defense height, how would you go at this defense? And so to have his IQ and the help, have him help me with different things has been a blessing. So.
Absolutely. And you guys, like I said, headed to that D3 title game. I know you said we believe. I know you preached it all season. But when I say that, you guys have a chance to make history next week, what pops into your mind?
These kids, really, you know, all the sacrifices, all the doubt that was in their mind at the beginning when I told them, hey, we can go and get one of these. And for them to get to where they are now, it makes it all worth it. And to go, you know, like we said last night, the job's not done. So that clock says 0-0 at the championship game. And so we need to pull one off and win that Valley championship. It'll be extremely special. And like I told you, you guys go down to history. The history started last night, being the first ever team to even make it to the Valleys. And to then, we win Valleys and to win Valleys and then go on to state. So this year could be a first of many things. And so, like I said, it's all for the kids. And this is to see their smiles last night and to see their – you know, their hard work pay off and their resiliency. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And again, everything I do for my is for my kids and my program.
Absolutely. And it's clearly evident, Coach, the amount of passion you pour into these kids. You're definitely doing an incredible job, and you're making you're making the community proud of the program, and making the kids believe. There it is. We believe. I got to ask you before we cut this off, Coach. Thanksgiving. You're practicing during Thanksgiving. I asked Coach Kyle Biggs this, but what's your go-to for Thanksgiving? What's the food that you gotta have while watching football on a Thursday?
For me, it's ham. I love ham. I love ham. I love mac and cheese, home cooked mac and cheese, not out the box mac and cheese. so for me, but I definitely have to have ham on Thanksgiving. That's one of my favorite things. I've always loved ham. So yeah, that's one thing I'll be looking for Thanksgiving is ham and mac and cheese. So
do you mix gravy in there at all, or just you got to separate those two things?
I got to separate those two.
All right.
I got to separate those two.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, and mashed potatoes, too. I love mashed potatoes.
Okay, all right, good call. Well, I got a little secret formula for my mac and cheese, so we got ourselves an air fryer. So I'll cook the mac and cheese, and, yeah, you're right, not the ones in the box. I'll get it in a nice container, and it's like the truffle mac and cheese. Then I'll put it in the air fryer for 3 minutes, and it makes those edges nice and crispy. It comes out legit. Add a little pesto to it. Man, that's been my go-to lately. So maybe a little pro tip right there with your mac and cheese next time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You bet. All right, Coach, always fun to catch up with you. It's been fun watching your team this season. You got one more game, though. One more game.
Yes,
lay it on the line, Coach.
Yes, sir. That's the plan. Thank you.
All right, you bet. Coach Damon Jenkins of Kerman. All right, we're going to have to take a break here. We're going to be talking with Jackson Moore, Bark Board, Fresno State, recruits, our Valley kids. He was able to see Bryson Donaldson live last night. Always fun to talk to Jackson Moore. Coming up next on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number two. Here we go. There we go. All right. Sorry, guy. I scared you out of your seat. All right. Hour number two is upon us here at Central Valley Sports Report, live from First String Sports. I am your host, Paul Metters. This has been a great show. Just reviewing the high school games from last night. I mentioned all those adjectives: exhilarating, amazing, controversial, heartbreaking. That's sports in general. That's high school football, man. These guys lay it all on the line. Coach Jenkins said it best at the end. I said, well, what when I say you guys are going to be playing in the D3 Central Section Championship game, what comes to your mind? He said the kids. It's the kids, right? And it's so meaningful and so important to the kids, to the community, to the school. These games absolutely matter. That's why we're so passionate about it. That's why we want everything to be just, justified. And when things don't go your way, you get a little angry at times. And, sometimes life doesn't work out like we thought. And that's why sports can be a great metaphor for life. But we love talking about the high school sports and high school kids and highlighting everybody in our great Central Section. We love our Central Valley, and I hope that shines through also what we do here on 1430 ESPN. All right, we're going to be talking with Jackson Moore right now, 247 Sports. Publisher of barkboard.com. Prominent guest, is that a good word? Prominent guest on the Bulldog Hour with Tony D. That's a great follow on Twitter at JacksonMoore247. So, Jackson, thanks for coming to First String Sports. We weren't able to connect last year, first year of the show. We were able to talk about stuff, but welcome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I didn't know you were going to CVC last night, taking the drive to Visalia because you wanted to see Bryson Donaldson for yourself, Fresno State running back commit. We talked with Mason Hughes after Jackson, so a lot of talk about last night's game. But, right, I mean, you see the numbers. You see the body type. You see the build. You see all those things. You watch the highlights. But seeing him in person, what are some of your thoughts about Bryson?
Yeah, there's definitely – I mean, when you go see Bryson Donaldson play, there's 21 D2 athletes on the field, and then there's Donaldson. It feels just like he's a bit of a cheat code out there. And, I mean, you get the ball to him as much as possible. I was almost surprised. I mean, Tyler Union really strategized pretty well against him. They loaded the box. There weren't a lot of those huge runs. I mean, you know, you see his stats every week, and you feel like he's just going to score every time he touches the ball. And that wasn't quite the case against Tyler Union. And in the rain, it was a little tough conditions to get that going. But, I mean, they just kept feeding him the ball, and you just knew if he touched it enough, he was going to make some things happen. I know he had over 30 carries and got in the end zone 4 times. So, I mean, really impressed. And, you know, just about every 3-star running back kind of looks like that at the high school level.
Sure.
But he looks like he could suit up for the Bulldogs tomorrow or tonight if they needed him to. So I think he's going to translate pretty well. He's well-developed. And I think that's the thing that stands out most about him is he's ready right now.
Physically, he's ready. Absolutely. Is there a comp that we can make out there for the listeners? Is he a Mims guy? Is he a Rivers guy? Is there somebody he reminds you of?
Well, I believe his nickname within the team is Beast Mode. And so I can see Marshawn Lynch in him, not quite a Bulldog, but enough ties with Coach Tedford. So I think he's that style of running back, a guy that is very strong but can break the big one too.
All right. So Fresno State kicking off tonight at 7:30. Obviously, you're well connected with Fresno State, and you're on the ground level getting the information. And, yeah, you're a great follow on Twitter and love hearing what you have to say on the radio. And the press conferences, too. So thanks for coming in again today. I know you got a busy day. So what is, like, your schedule? I'm just curious about that really quick. We're going to talk about some of these guys in a second. But, like, when do you arrive to the stadium? What's your access point after the game, going to press conferences? What's that look like in a snapshot?
Yeah, you know, I like to get there real early. Before I started working, I'd go tailgate at, like, noon and hang out of there all day. It gets tough because I cover a few other teams for 24/7 Sports as well. I cover Cal and Stanford, San Jose State, and usually between one of those teams, someone's playing at like 1 or 4. You know, so I try to time it up just right where I finish covering that game and then bolt over to the stadium a good 2 hours before kickoff or so. Get up to the press box and do a little bit of work. But these days, I spend most of the game on the field, taking pictures and just kind of trying to glean information that. You know, what kind of that behind-the-scenes stuff you can only find out if you're on the field. Just kind of felt like in the press box, it wasn't much different than watching on TV.
Sure.
So I like that experience a lot more. And then that also gives me the fast lane to run with the team into the locker room, press box, or post-game interview area. So I try to make it to the very last second to see if I can see anything neat before I leave. But, then I get to the post-game and – usually I'm right there about the same time Tedford walks in.
And you do. You got to hustle. You got to hustle and get to that press conference. All right, I want to ask you really quick. I'm always curious about this. Has there ever been an awkward moment at a press conference? Maybe you have said a question and the coach is looking at you funny or gives you a smart aleck remark or somebody else has. There, you know, just kind of that awkward exchange. You're like, oh, boy, what did I get myself into? You ever had a moment like that with a coach?
You know, not often.
Because you're so well prepared, though, Jackson. You ask great questions, that's why.
I've also been fortunate here at Fresno State that most of the coaches have been really mild-mannered. I mean, even Tim DeRuiter, I probably asked him quite a few uncomfortable questions, and he was just the nicest guy every time you'd ask something like that. So, and didn't have to ask too many tough questions to Coach Tedford. Usually his teams are taking care of business, so covering the other teams too, not a whole lot of awkward exchanges. I know earlier this season I gave Coach Wilcox a question he didn't appreciate all that much. Cal, after they lost to Utah, you know, they gave up a season high points to 34 to Utah at that time, and I didn't think that was very impressive. I didn't really prefer the verbiage I used to ask him about that performance, but you know, he's wasn't out of character for him to be a little upset after a loss.
Well, you speak the truth, man. If guys can't handle the truth, they maybe they need another profession. But, okay, cool. I love that stuff. So let's talk about some local kids. You know, you keep track, obviously, on your website, and you're well-connected to the high school teams as well, especially our kids going to Fresno State. So we got 5 kids committed from the Central Section right now. We got the Nixon kid, you know, from Liberty, 6'5", 6'4". Played a little quarterback, but we see him more as the tight end, I would presume. Let's talk about the Clovis West kids. Marshall Sanders, you know, that's a big name. He's, you know, played varsity football as a freshman, two-way guy. Where does Fresno State see him more? As an athlete, a receiver, DB?
He should be on offense at receiver, but I think probably athlete's the better term. It reminds me a bit of when Jalen Cropper first showed up. You know, he wasn't really used as a pure receiver his freshman year. They were giving him sweeps and using him on returns and just about everything but throwing him the ball.
Yeah.
So I could see that kind of role being right in the door for Sanders when he gets on campus, but eventually, you know, being more of a traditional receiver, if not that first year. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he's on special teams and expands his role a little bit more too.
Well, I remember watching Jalen Cropper his senior year at Buchanan, right? Transferred from Sanger to Buchanan. He didn't get the ball thrown to him that much either, so maybe it took him a while. They played more on defense, which surprised me. That's the time for another story, but that year the Buchanan used him mostly on defense, and they kicked away from him, so he's more of a punt return decoy. But, yeah, good stuff there. So, you know, JoJo Pierre is another one that from Clovis West. You know, those guys are good athletes, aren't they?
Yeah, I think Piero might be kind of the sneakiest addition of the class just in terms of he's not as highly rated as some of the other guys and doesn't have as many offers. But, I mean, a two-way guy also, I think he's a pretty good receiver. But really excels on defense. A couple times I saw him, I know he was at safety at Clovis West. He's probably going to be a corner at Fresno State. And I think he's going to translate well. When I saw him on the camp circuit, I was just surprised how developed he is physically. he's definitely been spending time in the weight room, and it hasn't impacted his speed or agility. So I think he's going to translate really well. I don't think it's going to take him long to catch on.
And another Clovis West kid, man. I got to be honest. He's been, out of all these kids here that we're talking about, he's been the most impressive to me, and that's the linebacker Titus Kajavi. Didn't have a lot of offers. I don't know if you'd call him a late bloomer because he's been on varsity for 3 years. But he's a dude, man. He's had some huge games. He's not afraid to hit. Pretty good ball coverage side to side. Doesn't have that super speed, but he can fill a hole, can he?
Yeah, definitely. And when I got to see him, I was just so surprised about how he violent. I don't know if violent's the right word, but like aggressive. Like you see him just going up all the way until the whistle and letting his opponent hear it in a way that maybe you don't see all that much these days. And so, I mean, even just kind of his presence and mentality seemed to impact the game as much as his athletic ability did. Both sides of the ball, too, being a blocker, fullback, getting a few carries. So I'm really excited about him and Logan Stute, the two of them. You know, how cool would it be if they're the two starting linebackers at Fresno State in the future? It's a tough position in college right now with so many teams playing 4-2-5. And, you know, you get two starting linebackers in there that don't come out very often and like 10 scholarship guys at the position. It gets tough to get on the field, but it's going to time up well. Phoenix Jackson's really the only young linebacker Fresno State has playing right now. So within the next 2 years, those doors should open for those guys.
Awesome. I want to ask you, too, about what you see more. I like how you said, you know, two linebackers hardly coming off the field. What do you think college coaches, let's say specifically Fresno State, what are they looking for mostly in their linebackers, guys that can do a little bit of everything, more side-to-side guys that can drop back in coverage? What type of guys have they been recruiting?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think recruiting-wise, they're looking for a diverse group. You know, you seem like you've got your old-school linebackers, you've got like some run-fit guys, you've got more athletes that are better for pass protection, and they kind of pick and choose on a certain matchup who might be in there. But it seems like the guys that end up in those prominent roles are the more athletic types, the ones that can cover more space and have more of a knack for pass coverage. Right now, it's kind of one and one. Lavelle Bailey's the guy that can really do just about everything, and it's probably better dropping back. And Malachi Langley's a little bit more of a run stopper. So kind of one of each, I would say, out there, which is interesting because I think Stute and Kajavi are both kind of the Langley type of linebacker. So we'll see if they coexist or how that's going to work.
Talking with Jackson Moore, the thing about those two guys, I mean, Logan Stute's a physical specimen, right? We talked about Bryson Donaldson, how he looks ready to step on a college D1 football field. But, hey, Logan Stute's well put together. Kajavi's got a good frameable body as well. So, you know, Fresno State, well what is – so you mentioned Phoenix, right? He's one of the more younger linebackers. You think there's an opportunity for these guys to play maybe 2 years? Is that kind of projectable, 2-3 years maybe?
Yeah, I think so, because you've got Lavelle Bailey's playing his last home game tonight, and you've got Raymond Scott, who looks like he's going to get a seventh year of college.
Okay.
You've got Tuasivi Nomura, who's kind of bouncing back between D-end and linebacker. Phoenix Jackson's going to be a junior next year. You still got one more year with Malachi Langley.
Okay.
So it's going to be a veteran group next year, and then pretty much everyone's out the door except for Phoenix Jackson. Tyler Mello still got another year, so, I mean, there's a lot of guys in there, and it's going to thin out going into the 2025 season. So, you know, if Stute and Kajabi, I mean, if they take redshirt years and really get ready for the following season, I mean, there's going to be a door open for them to be in that two deep as redshirt freshmen.
And Tyler Mello, you mentioned, from Hanford. He's had battled some injuries, but he's playing a lot on special teams, right? Special teams demon, is that what they call some of these guys?
Yeah, and that's one other area. We've seen against certain teams, they use like a 4-3 package. I think that's something they want to do more of down the road, and Mello's usually one of those guys that gets that role. So hopefully for Mello that he kind of builds on that next year and gets more of a role. And I think that's also something that student Kajabi can kind of understudy as well as young guys.
Good stuff. All right. So are there any other D1 guys that, you know, underclassmen, so to speak, freshmen, sophomore, juniors that you got your eye on that, you know, are making some noise out there? Deegan Rose certainly comes to mind. He's got another offer, right?
Yeah, Deegan Virginia Rose, Tech.
Virginia Tech. All right. So I think we're going to see those start trickling in. But, you know, I mean, what do you think about Deegan? I've said on air that, hey, 6'4", you know, approaching 200 pounds if he's not there already. Coach Aaron Wilkins will definitely attest to this. He's got the complete package. The kid's got a good arm. I've seen him make Division I type throws already as a sophomore. So, you know, a player like that, certainly attractive for Fresno State, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And he seems very receptive to the idea from when I've been able to talk to him about it. I will say Fresno State does not typically offer any sophomores at this stage of the game. So they've been letting him know to be a little bit patient. And I think he's got the message. There's like two or three offers on the whole board for Fresno State for 26. So I don't think he's taken offense to that. And I'm sure that offer is going to come eventually. But yeah, I mean, to have that package that young and to have so much more of a ceiling to go, I mean, future is very bright for him. Love his personality. He's a really nice kid. And, I mean, yeah, he's definitely on track to be in. If he doesn't stay here, he'll be somewhere in the Power 5.
Yeah, when he got that first couple offers, I think this last summer, you're like, okay, yep, he's going to, you know, once one offer comes and it gets on everybody's radar. But, hey, he's got that running element too. I mean, it's not the tush push because you can't do that in high school, but Clovis High, the last half of the season, has got this play down that he's you can't tackle him. Right? He's scoring on those short yardage situations. All right. You know, we've heard it. We've been around the Central Valley for a long time, Jackson. We hear, oh, Fresno State, they don't recruit in the Valley, maybe in the old regime, right? And that's definitely not in the past anymore. But Coach Tepper and staff, I mean, they know the heart of the Central Valley, don't they? They know what type of kids come out here. Think of Josh Hokett, you know, obviously he was a walk-on, all that stuff. But, you know, just think of those types of kids. But Fresno State, they've made a concentrated effort to recruit in the Valley, don't they?
Yeah, they sure do. And, you know, there's probably a lot of players in the Valley that feel like they should be recruited by Fresno State maybe more than they are. But when you look at the Bulldogs class, they've got 11 commits and 7 are from the Valley. I mean, that's unheard of for Fresno State to have that big of a percentage. And again, as big of a number as 7 is in terms of local commits, 11's a key number too, because there's not a lot of spots with, you know, you got to save room for transfer portal. Coach Tedford likes to recruit the junior college ranks. There's only 13 seniors being honored tonight. I assume double-digit guys are going to leave the program after the season. That's just how it works these days. But, you know, they kind of look at this class as having maybe 11 to 15 spots for high schoolers. And,
wow,
you know, if more than half of them are in the Valley, I think that's pretty darn good. You know, hopefully there's some extra spots for some of those guys that they can, and also maybe preferred walk-on spots for some that just fell under the radar. But, you know, they've recruited the Valley heavily this year. They've only really missed on like two guys in the Valley that they really wanted. So as well as not just offering 9 Valley recruits, but connecting on 7 of the 9, that's another big thing, because in years past, it just seems like the top 4 or 5 guys, maybe you're lucky to get one, and then you scoop up that second tier of Valley players. And there's not really that high-end guy in this class, but there were some that could be Power 5 recruits that stayed home.
Okay, and so I'm thinking of Logan Stute from Buchanan, and to me he was a no-brainer, right? A kid that grew up loving Fresno State football, and Kajabi too. He's like, yeah, once Fresno State offered me, yeah. And then he's like, I texted Logan, hey, you want to commit? Yeah, let's commit together. All right, yeah, we'll go together. So, you know, all that cool stuff about loving Fresno State and then end up playing at Fresno State's a cool story. All right, let's talk about a couple guys that were high-profile football players here in the Valley that are now a freshman at Fresno State. Thinking about Brandon Ramirez, and I think about Jaden Mandel. So Jaden Mandel, let's talk about him first. Mm-hmm. Good friends with Logan Stute. That's why I figured that Logan was going to commit as well. It's been the number three quarterback for most of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number three. Had a couple chances maybe to come in, right? Because if Fife got hurt in a couple games, Jaden was going to be the guy. You know, quarterback can be a tricky thing. Transfers, graduation, injuries. What's his prognosis for the next couple years?
Yeah, and tonight might be another night. I mean, Mikey Keene's status is up in the air. So if it's Logan Fife again, Mandel's one play away. And as 23-point favorites, hopefully there's a chance. hopefully Logan Fife stays healthy, and hopefully Mandel gets some reps too at the end of the game. Hopefully it works out that way. But he's the number three quarterback, both by proving it and by default. I mean, there's four scholarship quarterbacks on the roster, and Joshua Wood had to get surgery in August, so there's only three guys on the roster. So, but Mandel is really impressed. It's not just he's the third guy because there's only three guys. It's, I mean, he really caught their eye. He performed very well in the spring. They were very impressed. And also continue that into the fall. I think if Wood was healthy, Mandel would probably still be number three based off what he did in camp. And so it was going to be just about near impossible for him to come in as a true freshman and knock off both Fife and the newcomer Keene. But I think, you know, just establishing himself ahead of Wood, which, you know, we'll see when Wood gets healthy if that's still the case. But that was goal number one. And goal number two was maybe planting a little bit of seed of doubt that his ceiling might be higher than the guys in front of him. And Fife and Keene are both eligible through 2025. So, you know, maybe just kind of planting that idea that maybe by 25 he could be a better quarterback than those two guys as such a young quarterback with so much room to grow. And I think he has done that as well. So, you know, is Keene going to stick around for that long? You know, will he maybe test the NFL draft waters in 25 or chase an NIL bag as a grad transfer? That's just kind of the way it is now. Will Logan Fife stick around next year knowing he's going to sit behind Keene? So there could be a lane for Mandel to get in there before 25, but even if he has to wait, he's still got 2 years to be the starter after that. And I think he's a guy that Fresno State will pass on transfers and put their confidence in him, even if he hasn't had much game experience yet.
Wow, that's great to hear. Talking with Jackson Moore, 247sportsbarkboard.com. All right, Brandon Ramirez, let's talk about him a little bit. So that great stretch that he had last year in the playoffs for San Joaquin Memorial, running the football, broadcasted some games with Coach Pat Hill. Coach Hill is like, oh, yeah, he's a running back. He's going to be running back next level. Going into camp, all this talk, where's Brandon at right now? People want to know. I want to know. Where's Brandon Ramirez at?
Yeah, well, Malik Sherrod is getting almost all the snaps at running back, and Elijah Gilliam's getting whatever's left over after that, and they're the only two running backs really playing right now, so it's tough.
Is he on the depth chart, though? He's suited up and all that?
He's
right?
Typically in uniform, yeah. So if there was an injury or if they get a lead, you know, maybe tonight's the night he gets his first snaps, but we do know after the first two running backs, we've seen Devin Rivers play a couple of games, but they kind of pulled the plug on that. It looks like they're going to redshirt him.
Okay.
Jonathan Arsenault's gotten a few of those snaps, so it would appear Ramirez is kind of probably fifth going down that line. He's definitely a different running back than anyone else in that group. When you watch practice, you just think, wow, you know, I mean, either he could be something special or maybe he's so different that he doesn't fit in there. Maybe safety might be where he, you know, you just don't know until he gets his chance. And all the coaches continue to say when he does get his chance, they think he's going to really do some good things out there. And I think they are so committed to Sherrod that you're almost a little worried if you throw him in there for a snap or two that he might do something good and then you can't redshirt him anymore. So I think Sherrod's going to get another big year next season, and then in 25 it's going to be a free-for-all for Ramirez, for Donaldson, for Rivers.
Yeah.
And if it's not by committee, one of those guys is going to have a chance for a long, special starting career at Fresno State.
Wow, that's exciting to think about, especially for people that are fans of football in the Central Valley. All right, Jackson, we only got a couple minutes here. Our time is absolutely flying by. All right, keys to the game tonight, you said what, 23-point spread?
Yeah.
Right, 23-point spread. All right, let's just talk about the pathway then that Fresno State would need to play in the Mountain West Championship game. What are we looking at there?
So they've got two losses and two teams have one loss ahead of them. So you look at the standings and it doesn't look good, but UNLV Air Force play each other tonight. So there's only going to be one loss team remaining. There's five teams that are all in the race still with two games to go. And there's a ton of scenarios on how it can all play out. And the good news for Fresno State is that barring a head-to-head tiebreaker against San Jose State, they pretty much win every other single tiebreaker. and if you've got more than two teams, it's probably going to come down to, which, as ridiculous as it sounds, a composite of computer polls that basically decides who wins the tiebreaker. And Fresno State is in first in the Mountain West in virtually all of those computer rankings. And as long as they win these last two, they're not going to drop. I don't think they're going to get caught from behind. So really the path, from what I can see, they got to win the last two, of course. They'll be heavily favored. And really the only path they don't get in that I can kind of pencil out is Air Force would need to win out and San Jose State would need to win out. That means both the Falcons and the Spartans would have to beat UNLV. Air Force would also have to beat Boise State. San Jose's got San Diego State tonight. So pretty much every other combination of results that I can find puts the Bulldogs in the championship game. But who they play, where it's at, is just a mess. That gets really tough to figure out.
Yeah, I don't care about that stuff. I want to make a pathway there. But gosh, those darn Spartans, huh? How about that? Those darn San Jose Spartans ruining everything. All right, last question here. I've been asking everybody that's come on the show. I'm going to go ahead and ask you. We got Thanksgiving on Thursday. You got any traditions? You got any favorite food? Right, that you like on Thanksgiving? What's your jam there?
Yeah, of course, time with the family. Usually, last couple of Thanksgivings, been going with my mom's family to Cayucas, which is a nice setting for Thanksgiving earlier in the week, and then get back in town for my dad's side of the family in Riverdale. Usually, got a nice property out there, and all the big family shows up, so that's always fun. That's like the one holiday where we always really make sure everyone gets together. So. I always love my green bean casserole. That's the one I think I always look forward to most.
Bacon or no bacon?
No bacon.
No bacon? All right.
Green bean and bacon is great, but my casserole, I just want the fried onion stuff on top.
Okay, all right. We might have to change your mind on that one. Maybe you're not making the bacon right. Got to put it on the air fryer like my mac and cheese. All right, Jackson, always fun to run into you and talk to you. You're a wealth of knowledge. You do a great job on barkboard.com. Make sure you guys check them out. Check them out on Twitter as well. Thanks for coming to First String Sports. I'll probably wave at you tonight. I got my season tickets, and I'll probably give you a shout-out down there on the field. But thanks for coming in. Really appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. A lot of fun. All right, it's Jackson Moore. Coming up next, we'll be talking with Mason Hughes, right, who also saw Bryson Donaldson last night as his Cavaliers advance barely to the Central Section Championship game. Going to be playing Lamar. Catch up with Mason Hughes next on 1430 ESPN.
1430 ESPN Fresno.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. Good stuff here. The conversation, Jackson Moore. You can go to 1430ESPNFresno.com. Go to podcast. Check out my show there. Central Valley Sports Report. Gabe Cameron. We're going to be talking with Gabe after the break as well. Home Field Advantage, obviously the Jose Gonzalez show in the mornings. And Tony D, Jackson Moore, is a guest on that show every week. They call him what? The de facto co-host, Jackson Moore. Good stuff here on 1430 ESPN, that's for sure. All right, we got Coach Mason Hughes, Central Valley Christian. Had one of the more improbable comebacks. I mean, maybe we could frame it that way last night, defeating Tulare. They advanced to the D2 title game, playing Lamar, rematch from last year. That game last night was 43-42. Mason, we talked late last night, well after midnight. When you woke up this morning, what was going through your mind? What's going on?
Well, I had to get my kids to different practices and things in the morning. Trying to plan all that out. My daughter's turning 16 this week, and so she's got a big birthday party down at Disneyland that I don't get to go to. it's a girls' trip. A bunch of girls going, so my mom and my wife and all the girls, so all her friends. So I wasn't going to go no matter what. But, yeah, trying to plan logistics, right? So just being a dad, right?
That's
no
a
matter
good
what
morning.
Happens on Friday night, the next day, tell coaches all the time, the next day you're the same guy.
Yeah, you are.
You literally the same guy.
You're no better, you're no worse. Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about last night's game. I mean, how the heck do you win a playoff game after committing 5 turnovers in the first half, down 34-13? I mean, how do you win a playoff game with those types of numbers? Wild.
Yeah, I mean, the conditions definitely, I think, were part of that for both teams, really. You know, it's not like Tulare played a flawless first half either. But I think our kids, they just didn't quit, you know. I mean, that's the bottom line. I think, they worked really hard, like every team does, right? But I think every team puts in similar physical preparation. But I think our kids showed that, the mental preparation and just all the hard work, they weren't going to go down without a fight, and they believed that they could pull some string of plays together to possibly get some momentum. That was really what we talked about at half. It's just you got 24 minutes left, seniors, 24 minutes left in your career potentially, and so do you want to remember it as I gave it my best shot, and I think our kids believe that they were frustrated for sure. I don't think they lacked confidence. They were just frustrated. And so, we had to kind of wrangle that in. And I think as coaches, we were frustrated. And, one of my coaches just kind of got us together and said, we could be frustrated like the kids, or we can be good coaches. And so, we just went in there and we had to change some things game plan wise to in order for us to be able to adjust like always, like any halftime. But then we also had to, just remind them that we still thought we were the best team, and we were just going to have to score more than one more point than them, right? And so that's kind of what we tried to do. And it second half didn't even start great. We had a good drive, but we didn't score. We still playing good on defense. I thought our defense played really well in the second half, and I think we were still down 21 with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter. It wasn't like we had just turned it around immediately. The kids are tough, mentally tough. I told them that last night. They're a mentally tough group.
And with high school playoffs, especially when you're the top dog and everybody's hunting you, and that ball bounces funny, or there's a play that has worked 100% of the time during the season, all of a sudden that play, goes for an interception, or, your star running back fumbles the ball. He's never fumbled it all season. Those are the types of things that happens in a playoff. And you can feel like you're in the twilight zone. That probably felt like, you probably had those moments in that first half for sure. But the second half was a different story. Just give us a snapshot version of how the second half went. You only allowed that one touchdown to Larry the rest of the way. And then how did you guys score that game-winning touchdown and two-point conversion?
Yeah. I think once we started scoring, I think both of our teams, to Larry and us, we thrive on scoring. And so our mojo is higher when we score. You could probably say that about every team, honestly, every high school team. And when you're not scoring, it's hard to build momentum. And so we didn't know that if we just started scoring, right, if we could finish our drive, that we would build on momentum, and that's exactly what started happening. And the field was still really wet, even though the rain had stopped in the third quarter. And so Tulare made some, they had some fumbles. They had a bad snap and they fumbled the ball a couple times. And I don't know if we capitalized on all of those, but like you could just see and feel the momentum changing. And so they're high school kids, and so our kids were gaining confidence, even though they were down by 2 scores. And you could see, in Tulare, they played like high school kids do when the momentum shifts, right? And so they think they got, they didn't play as well at times in the second half because they played pretty darn well in the first half at times. And so, all that started happening, and then kids just started making plays. Obviously we had to ride Bryson a lot Brent Cruz played a much better second half, you know, was much better with, you know, who he was attacking. And, you know, we had just, you know, Trent Grudonis made an unbelievable interception. And Aston Brinkman, another senior, just, you know, just again gave a top-notch effort and made unbelievable plays on kick return. You know, our kickoff team covered them and pinned them back inside the 20 a couple times in the second half. And, you know, so all those things start to build, momentum starts building, and you know, and then we get the big pick by Trent in the end zone when it looked like if they're going to score there, then the game's probably over. But we get a pick, and I don't know, we ran probably eight plays, and I'm sure Bryson had six of them or something like that. And you know, once we got across the 50, we had a good look at one of our 2-point plays, and we thought we had it set up. And you know, once you, the thing about when you score at the end, everybody's kind of, it's chaos, right? And so, you know, we had a good plan around the 50. We called a timeout at one point. I told the guys what we were going to do if we scored, you know, and I don't like to do that too often, but I thought we need to, if we scored, and it felt like we were going to, our kids had so much momentum that, you know, this is what we're going to do. And so, you know, I don't know if we executed our 2-point play very well, but like, the kids knew what they were supposed to do. At least, I don't know, nine of them did or something. so that was enough to get the score.
Well, all it takes is your center to know what to do, the guy that he's hiking know what to do, and when you give the ball to Bryson Donaldson, good things are usually going to happen. Yeah, so Jackson Moore was just on, and he was at the game last night, and so he was able to see Bryson firsthand. You know, as he's going to be going to Fresno State, but you got him for at least one more game, Coach, and we only got a couple minutes here. You know, what does Donaldson mean to you in the program? And he's just built different.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. Built different, obviously physically, but even, you know, just emotionally, mentally, just the way he remains positive, you know, even though we were down big at half, he continued to remain positive and is a vocal presence at halftime. And you know, and then we've given him the ball like 70 times in the last two games, you know, which is a whole lot for a high school kid. And he just keeps going, you know. I would like to not do that as much, but you know, we get on the field, he's the best player on the field, we think, in every game we play. And so you know, we gotta give him the ball. And so I think last night he became the all-time leading rusher in Visalia history last night. So I think that says a lot, especially since he missed a few games, right, because of his sophomore year, COVID, and then obviously last year. And so, I mean, he's legendary, that's for sure. Probably one of the best of all time in Visalia.
Yeah, he's definitely built his legacy. He's an exceptional football player, and I was glad I got to watch him last week for the first time. All right, Mace, we got another minute here. Give me your best Thanksgiving tradition or your go-to movie or your go-to food. What do you got?
Yeah, well, I'm a big stuffing guy. My wife's gonna make a sweet potato pie or casserole or something. I don't know. That sounds good.
With a bunch of brown sugar, hopefully. You got to load that thing up with brown sugar. Yeah,
so, right. Like, I don't even know what that is. So I know my grandparents used to make that, but I don't know what that is. I think honestly, one of the best traditions, this is going to sound silly, but, you know, because our house is kind of centered around football season during this time of year. And so if we're playing in the Valley Championship, then, you know, the family comes to my place. And if we're not, then we go up north, up to Sonoma County. And, you know, my brother-in-law, he's prepared all the time for us to lose this game last night, and he'll host, or us to win. And, you know, sure enough, he sends a text to the group chat, you know, hey, you know, Thanksgiving at Mason's. Thanks, buddy. You know? and so I think that's a great tradition, because I love going to my sister's house up north and seeing my nieces and nephews. But you know, if we're hosting, it's chaos here, but it means that we're playing in the Valley Championship. And so I think that's a pretty cool tradition, because you know, we've been blessed to be in that a lot recently.
No, you have. This is the sixth game in a row, two in Division Four, two in three, and now two in two. Mace, always love talking with you, my friend. Good luck. You're playing Lamar next week, and I'm sure we'll be chatting this week. And have a great Thanksgiving, my friend.
Thanks, Paul. You too.
You bet. All right, Mason Hughes, CVC. All right, we're going to have about 10 minutes. We're going to take a quick break and finally get to Gabe Camarillo. We got tons of stuff to talk about. We're going to squeeze it in the best we can here on 1430 ESPN. Man, what a wild game. A 28-0 lead for the Broncos. All of a sudden, boom, Clovis East not only is back in the game, but they are one play away, so to speak, with the chance to win the football game, which was improbable at one point, headed 34-7 headed into the fourth quarter. What's the best way to summarize that wild game that we saw last night?
If they played a fifth quarter, I don't know who wins that game, Paul. Yeah. If they play an extra quarter, if they decide, you know what, football should be played in five quarters, maybe the Timberwolves don't lose that game. I mean, that's how much momentum they had in the fourth quarter. I was talking to some people about the game last night, and it wasn't like a tale of two halves. It was a tale of three quarters and then one quarter, because North was up 34-7, and then Clovis East, I wouldn't call it luck because they executed so well on offense, but everything had to go their way to make it a game in the final 4 minutes, and it did. Touchdown, onside kick recovery, touchdown, three and out forced, touchdown. I mean, they went from down 34-7 with some change to go in the third quarter to down 34-28. With 4:20 to go in the fourth quarter. And obviously what looms large in that game is the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty called against Clovis East on a third down stop. If there's no penalty called, Clovis East gets the ball back with 2:20 and two timeouts and only needing a touchdown to win the game. And the way the offense was moving in the fourth quarter, a lot of people would be right to expect that to happen. However, they cannot look at that penalty and say that's the reason they lost. It's the turnovers, Paul. It's the turnovers and the struggles to stop Sinfeld in the first quarter. I mean, after one quarter, he had 218 rushing yards on five carries. You're not going to win games doing that on defense.
Well, I also point to that. I don't even think we could call it a goal line stand for Clovis North, but Clovis East had a chance to punch it in. They're at the 2 yard line on second down, and Ty Miller trips. He's trying to roll out to the right when maybe, hey, just give the ball to your dude, try to punch it in, but trips, and then a holding call. So they had one more play on fourth and three, and it looks like Clovis East had a chance, but they dropped a touchdown pass. But hey, little plays like that matter. You could point to a lot of things, Gabe. You're absolutely right in that one. So let's give a little bit of a preview. You heard our conversation with Coach Kyle Biggs. It's tough to beat a team twice. I don't know, Gabe, you and I are going to be talking about this game all week. We can't wait for it on Friday. Central's got the momentum. Clovis North, undefeated, tough to stop. But, hey, they got to learn how to close out games better. But they have all season. So, I mean, lots of dynamics to this game.
I wouldn't say they have to learn how to close out games better. It's just they have to put teams away in the third quarter and not let it become a game in the fourth quarter, which is what happened against Clovis West last month. It's what happened against Central last month. It's what happened to Clovis East last night. They have to be able in the third quarter when they're leading big. They just need that one last touchdown drive to put the game away. I felt if they recover the onside kick, Paul, they probably score and they probably put that game away. But it's plays like that. Give Clovis East credit, the audacity to go for an onside kick there, knowing that it's pretty much the game and they got it and they were able to make it a closer battle in the fourth quarter because of it. I think Biggs is going to do something like that. Biggs is a crafty coach. There's a reason why he has an 85% winning percentage as a head coach in the postseason in this section. He will make those calls. He will roll the dice. Maybe an onside kick comes in the second half if they're trailing against Clovis North. Maybe they go for it on fourth down in their own territory if they feel that they got to keep Clovis North's offense off the field. I'm expecting Biggs to throw the kitchen sink when it comes to playbook and decisions, because that's what it's going to take to beat a Broncos team that is still not beating themselves. I think they got 3 takeaways last night, so now the turnover margin is 16 takeaways and 2 given away.
No, absolutely. Lots of different factors in that one. Hey, I got to say, though, those are the two teams from the beginning of the playoffs that I predicted to play in the
finals.
Yeah,
good for you, Paul.
Yeah, give myself a little kudos. Give myself a little treat after the show here. But we've had a great show. But, Gabe, I can't end the show without talking at least a little bit about that Shafter deal. And new information was coming out as the night progressed. I mean, we obviously were involved in high school football, broadcasting the game, doing pregame, and then we're hearing about this Shafter stuff. But you came out with a video. You tweeted out a video. You saw the illegal man downfield. What's going on with Shafter right now?
So as far as I am concerned, this game is not over yet. They will meet Ryan Toss, the Shafter administration, the Torres administration. Both districts' athletic directors will meet tomorrow at 10 a.m. to talk about the game and to go over what should be done. Now, what was done was nothing. They didn't call the illegal man downfield because it wasn't noticed. It was a mistake by the referees, as simple as that. As far as what I was told earlier today from a source, the referees huddled up after they left the field, and they had a feeling they messed up. They knew they messed up. They talked to the athletic directors on both sides and said, all right, what can we do to fix this? It seems like the referees wanted to fix this, but from what I was told, there was a representative there that said you have to take this to the CIF. Now, the rule is, and I talked to another coach this morning about it, and they confirmed that the white hat, the head referee, is the authority on the field during games. They have the say on what happens in the game, on what call is overturned or upheld. That white hat, if they knew that, would have been able to reverse the call and say illegal man downfield, which is loss of down, Shafter wins 42-41. Because they didn't know that, maybe they were given some of the wrong information. They thought it was up to the CIF to fix it after the fact. That's not the case. There's no appeals process for this. But the fact that Shafter is getting a meeting with the CIF and Torres is a good sign for the Generals. Maybe they're able to overturn that two-point conversion and turn a Torres win into a Shafter win. But my thing on this, Paul, is one side tomorrow morning will have to tell their high school boys their season is over. And that really is tough to handle for me because I know these kids put their heart and their sweat and their blood and tears into this game. It came down once again to a two-point conversion, and I can't imagine the devastation on the Torres side if they have to lose for the second year in a row on a missed two-point conversion.
Wow, I just crazy scenarios. That would, in my opinion, would be the most unprecedented ending in Central Section history for a game if that call is overturned. Great stuff as always. Gabe, I opened up the show by saying it's wild, wacky, controversial, exhilarating, heartbreaking sport that we love to talk about, football. It is absolutely, you know, you go through every gamut of emotion. Then you're right. Some team's going to have to, the coaching staff is going to have to tell their team that they're not going to be playing the day after Thanksgiving. But, incredible stuff, Gabe. Good job as always. We had a lot of fun last night, and have a good Thanksgiving, my friend.
All right. Since you didn't ask me, I'll tell you. Stuffing
well, you
or
said
nothing.
I got to get out right now. All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
Stuffing or nothing. I'll just say that. Stuffing or nothing. Or turkey, too. But no, don't get the ham out of my plate. I don't like ham that much as I like turkey.
All right, how about crunchies in your stuffing, man? No
yes.
celery, nothing, right? Yes.
Yes. And you know what? My dad's asking me what I want to make for Thanksgiving. Peach cobbler is going to be at the Camarillo table from yours truly.
All right, give me your address. I'm a peach cobbler guy. I'll be there. At least give me your leftovers. All right, always fun with you, Gabe. Thank you. Thank you to Leeds Air Plumbing and Heating, of course, First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez and Gabe, Kyle Biggs, Damon Jenkins, Jackson Moore, Mason Hughes. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We will talk to you later.